Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Wednesday morning, 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. And, you know, we start off this program, the first half of the program, is a discussion. It's an open discussion at times of issues in the news and beyond. It's the Roundtable panel. And today's panel, and I'm not going to say it's an all-star panel, because Joe Bonilla has already tweeted that I'm going to say that. So I got a couple words for you, Joe, and they ain't all-star.
Okay, well, you still said it, though.
We have corporate attorney Rich Honan here, and good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
And we have communications consultant Joe Bonilla, the snarky Joe Bonilla is here.
Good morning.
And the ever pleasant and professional Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here.
Thank you kindly, Ray.
Also, Alan Shartok is here. And
let me hold the door for you, Ray.
Good morning, sir. Nice to have you all here today. The email address is panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org if you want to write in when you hear us talking about things. And, you know, do us a favor, a couple favors. One, keep them brief, on topic. Don't meander. That's what we do on the show. We'll handle the meandering. Don't include links. We can't click them on the air. Don't use abbreviations. And one email per customer per day is great.
I was going to say, because we had one guy yesterday who wrote us 10 times.
Okay. Can I just say that it's a complaint that I have, a personal one?
Yeah, please. Me too.
Just write us when we're on the air. Don't write us at 3 in the morning or 4 in the afternoon.
Nine-paragraph letters.
We get 1,000 emails a day. Just write it during the show, and then we'll know that it's for the show.
Yeah.
All right.
You got a long, long letter. Write it to the Berkshire Eagle, and Jen will read it.
Having said that, we love your letters.
Oh, yeah, we love your letters.
Constantly love them.
At times. The email address, once again, is panel@wamc.org. Trump declares via Twitter the North Korean nuclear threat is over. The president tweeted today that there was no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea. Just landed, long trip, but everybody can now feel much safer than the day I took office. He tweeted, there is no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea. Meeting with Kim Jong-un was an interesting and very positive experience. North Korea has great potential for the future. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is meeting with President Moon Jae-in this morning to discuss the summit in South Korea. He is there. Japanese Foreign Minister Taro Kono is heading to Seoul, and he'll meet with Pompeo there. And, you know, Pompeo is spreading the word now. Alan.
Alan, why are you calling me? You got these people here. You have.
All right. All right, Rich, I'll throw this to you. Chuck Schumer, and actually he was very consistent. He was a naysayer of the Iran deal, and he's a naysayer of this deal. Rich,
Chuck Schumer is nothing if not consistent. I think the deal was, well, the deal. I think the meeting was a good start. I know people want to throw stones at it. I think it was a good start, I guess we could probably just take everything that I was saying against the Iran deal last time, and you know, you guys can now take that position, I'll take the pro position.
Let's play a little role reversal game. If this happened during the Obama administration, would Rich Honan say, oh, this is the best?
You know, I'd love to say that I would be above personalities and just judge it on the merits.
But we would all know it's a lie.
Well, I would try. but I got to tell you, I mean, you find yourself, at least I do, I find myself making the exact same arguments in favor of, oh, well, you know, you have to reach out to a dictator. You know, it's better to be fighting than to be, you know, I'm sorry, it's better to be talking than fighting. And that's what people were telling me last time when the Obama administration was reaching out to Iran and to Cuba. So I think we have to have the grace to be a little cognizant of our own hypocrisy.
So this is a teachable moment, then.
I hate that phrase.
Well, let's say it again. This is a teachable moment here on the All-Star panel. Joe Bonilla.
There it is. Yeah. The All-Star panel.
I did that for you, Joe.
Oh, I appreciate it, Ray. Well, you know, look at this. You know, here we have, you know, for weeks and weeks, we didn't even know if the summit was actually going to happen in the first place, and it finally did. We have to give the president and his team a little bit of credit for actually making it actually happen. However, this reality show diplomacy that we're seeing right now, will he meet with Kim? Will he not meet with Kim? And then, you know, the whole letter and everything like that. And finally, we actually have the summit. And really, at the end of the day, there wasn't really a lot of substance. They still are very far apart in terms of really trying to figure out the issues between the U.S. and the West and North Korea. So was it really just a show? Yes.
But wasn't it supposed to be a show? Aren't most summits shows?
Well,
the only difference being that most summits come after they've already done all the negotiations.
Right, and you usually see a full docket of, you know, things that they agreed to after or before the summit. We didn't really see that. We just saw more or less the media posturing of this.
Yeah, I agree in that. You know, I think negotiation is the key word. It's one thing to, you know, say you had that golden handshake, that historic handshake. But what's the end? You know, we have an administrator who claims he's the art of making deals, but he's not going to be the one making the deals. It's going to be Pompeo and Bolton.
However, you know, there is something to be said for a personal connection. And so perhaps Trump is a little more canny than those in the left-wing press would give him credit for.
I think, I mean, again, it's something that is absolutely, you know, the door is open. And I think what's going to be happening next is looking in the couple of months to see, you know, who's going to be saying what at the table. And again, when you look at the two other lead negotiators in his cabinet, they have very divisive plans and yes. statements. So, you know, I take a lot at the end of the week on Thursday when we have our presence in China, what will be said there? Because if you look at the any bigger picture story that's coming out of this is the role that China has. And, you know, Alan will love to talk about that as well.
Well, he's been refreshingly silent thus far. And Alan, you want to say anything?
Can I ask Jen a question? So I started off by saying a good start. Mm-hmm. Do you agree or disagree?
It's a start. It's a good one or a bad one. I think it's more of a neutral start in that it's happened. But I think the scrutiny then goes to what happens next. And I think you know,
that's
you have to look not only at you know, the trade deals that are going to be affected by this. I think the military waters, the military, you know, there seems to be this conflict between what's war game and what's readiness practice, what will actually happen in August. And also there's the humanitarian aspect, which has not been discussed at all. And you know, whatever kind of deal for denuclearization is supposed to ultimately be part of a peace treaty negotiation. And what is that really going to look like? And you know, we have Trump saying that Kim Jong-un supports a hasty, you know, denuclearization effort. But really, how quickly is that going to happen, especially when you look at international law? And you're going to have to want, you know, all the other allies and opponents in the region are going to want to have their people in looking to see that this is actually going to be done. This doesn't takes forever to put these things up. There's environmental impacts. I mean, there's a lot at stake here.
Alan.
Well, far be it for me to say that his pants are on fire because he's such
liar.
Trump's, he's such a liar. You know, he'll know in 2 seconds. He says, this guy who he's been calling all kinds of names is now really concerned about his people in Korea, and he has legitimized this awful regime the way that he has done. And, you know, I'm glad Rich has admitted to his hypocrisy here. And nevertheless, you know, China is the big winner in all of this because China, you know, the New York Times and others are saying on the front page, China is really worried about this. On the contrary, China makes out like a bandit here. And
how is that?
Well,
I mean,
it to you, Rich,
yes.
Just so you'll know.
Oh, boy.
And that is the joint war games, you know, those war games that we have. Who really was worried about that? The North Koreans weren't that worried. The Chinese were worried because that set of circumstances, that group of people really were telling China, look, we know your militaristic designs. Here's one way we're going to keep you honest. So that's how it is. And Trump said terrible things about this guy. He'll say them again. He says that he trusts him. Why would he trust him? Well, I mean, what kind of nonsense is that? So I'm very disturbed by this. I think it's a first steppers are not cognizant of the fact that he said from the very beginning it's all or nothing, and now it's nothing. That's what it is.
Well, and I think if you look at the New Yorker story on what's happened, there's it leads with this quote from Trump that basically builds in a caveat for him to say, you know, like 6 months down the line, I could be saying I'm wrong, but you don't know. And I think that's very telling, because I think that you can open the window and you can make a meeting happen. But I think, you know, the real litmus is, you know, the effectiveness. And you know, we all know that the words that are used kind of range so much. So I think that you need more substance if this is really going to be a true effort. Otherwise, it's just posturing. And I think that long-term effect...
Wait, this guy postures?
...has to deal with, you know, how the other allies in the region will look at us, you know, whether it's Taiwan, Japan. Australia, Japan. And I think... you have to be more careful, and you have to back it up. I mean, what has North Korea actually agreed to do out of yesterday's brief meeting? You know, will there be more meetings is something that I'm curious
and,
about.
And in
right,
fact,
the long-term view. Right.
And well, fact, well, they clearly will be.
And in fact, have they said that they're going to do any more than they've always said they were going to do?
You know, if this had happened 4 years ago, you guys would just be praising. Hello? You'd be praising Obama. You'd say, wow, just to reach out in this historic step. And of course, it's just the first step. You'd be pointing out accurately that the first couple of meetings between Reagan and Gorbachev at Reykjavik did not go very well. In fact, it went badly and took some time. Alan, I'll admit to my hypocrisy or my biases, but I think
there's a lot of it going around.
I was going to say I don't think I'm the only one. I think
what are you,
and
lawyer?
Maybe it's not hypocrisy. Maybe we just look at things through our own lens, our own filters.
Yeah, but I think certainly right now, again, it's still a start. But again, the long-term view is, do we actually have consistency with diplomacy here? And will we actually see these long-term meetings and actually a long-term view on it? That's really my concern with this, because we've seen every step of the way since he's come into office that there's been, you know, this all this posturing and like the hemming and hawing and different changes. But there hasn't really been any sort of really MO outside of just chaos.
I think there absolutely has been. His MO has always been... that one, we're going to look for American interests first. Two, we're not going to apologize for America's existence in the world. Three, yes, we are going to have a strong military. Four, we're going to use trade as, call it a weapon, call it as a tool, call it as leverage. And five, that having done all that, we're going to hope to be able to come to agreements, you know, more out of strength than out of weakness.
I think there are challenges to that, though. I think with, for example, this statement Trump made about withdrawing troops from South Korea. And I think, you know, if you're a troop member, you're really in limbo, because then you have General Mattis saying, like, I don't think that's part of the deal. So what is part of the deal? I think there's a lot of things you have made the start, yes, but I think there's an urgent need for more clarity and more specificity. Otherwise,
sure,
we're wasting more dollars and more time.
And that's exactly what in your quote in the Newsweek quote, that's exactly what Trump said. You know, he said we're going to keep working, and 6 months from now, we might not be anywhere, but we're going to keep working towards it.
And one thing is clear, at least at this point, the troops aren't going anywhere. They're staying in South Korea.
I mean, the full quote from Trump was, you know, he'd like to eventually see troops out of there. I think everybody, that would be great if we got to that point.
I remember, Rich, when we were in Germany, in East Germany, on a trip that the Adenauer Foundation had put up. And they had over 30,000 troops there, and they didn't know where to put them. But the Russians had no place to put them.
We have troops everywhere. I think the latest is something like 80 countries that we have troops abroad. And I think, you know, that does eat a chunk of our defense.
And by the way,
absolutely.
Yeah, and isn't that always going to be the case? I mean, in the foreseeable future, aren't we always going to have military
be that
forces?
World's policeman.
And by the way, I think I got that wrong. I think it was 300,000.
Wow.
Yeah, I was going to say you're off by an order of magnitude, but that's okay.
I thought it was pretty funny. Secretary of State Pompeo is, of course, the former CIA director. He plans to fly to Beijing to update the Chinese government on the talks. I have a funny feeling they already know what happened at the talks, but... That'll be happening as well. He'll be making the rounds and trying to...
It was great when Trump said yesterday, and he was going through all his friends, that guy's a dear friend, and this guy's a dear friend, and he comes down to the Chinese and says, well, maybe not so much. Maybe not so much.
Did anybody see on the news, and I don't know what when I saw it yesterday, but there was a on the crawl, it said, U.S. administration official, our policy is no friends, no enemies. Did you see that?
I did not.
No.
I think that was a I only saw it once, but I thought that was a fascinating. Is that a change? I mean,
friends, no enemies.
No friends, no enemies. It's like a John Lennon song.
Perpetual purgatory.
It's not a change. I mean, Trump has been saying
this. More like Kurt Cobain.
It's a little
more grunge.
Yeah.
They're having their own conversation.
I was thinking about that myself.
Yes.
It's very rude.
Well, you know, you're a former professor. Why don't you wrap somebody on the knuckles with a ruler? Let's take a break. The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. It's the roundtable panel. Joe Bonilla is here. He's a communications consultant. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here. Corporate attorney Rich Honan is here. And WAMC's Alan Shartok. Ray is in for Joe. We'll be back after news. Nice music for an abrasive conversation. 9:33. It's the roundtable panel on a Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The panel today: Alan Shartok, Jen Smith, Rich Honan, and Joe Bonilla. And we welcome your thoughts, your deep thoughts, at panel@wamc.org. And we have some letters, Alan.
We do, and I'm glad you asked for them, Ray. Nuclear weapons out, golf resorts in. Imagine the conversation behind closed doors. Rich. If it had happened 4 years ago, at least one of the participants would not be a person with a record of dishonesty. I don't believe a word that either man says, and Trump is more interested in Trump prosperity than U.S. safety. Once the Nobel Prize is given or not given, everything will revert to normal, and that's Lore, or is it Lori, in Cherry Valley, where everybody breaks by.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were going somewhere else with that. Good for you. Here, let me have that.
I'm careful about that.
Thank you.
Okay, Andy says, summit with North Korea. Good morning, all-star panel.
There it is.
Your fault, Bonilla.
We're getting shirts.
To quote Winston Churchill, this is the beginning of the beginning. Reducing nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula is a worthy goal. Giving up war games for no hard assurances isn't really that big a loss. Korea is still under our nuclear umbrella. Perhaps all the dollars spent on our missile subs is money well spent, and that's from Andy.
The Churchill quote is actually longer, right? It is not the beginning of the end. It is the
beginning of
the end of the beginning.
Right. Ah.
And John says, summit. Even a momentary respite from the fire and fury rhetoric and threat of nuclear war is welcome. But when we kiss up to dictators and flip off democratically elected allies, that is very concerning. Trump still acts like Putin's petulant puppet. And I say that's PPP. Putin's petulant puppet. And that's from John in Saratoga Springs.
Is that alliteration? Is that alliteration with consonants?
Look at that.
What, you never
consonants.
And with vowels,
consternation.
It's
consonation.
You never took an English course in a public college if you went? Forget it. Okay, Ellen says, Rich et al., what did we get other than Trump's appearance?
Wow.
We're et al. We have no names anymore.
What did we get other than Trump's appeasement of Russia? The end of the war games is what Russia wanted for quite a while. This is not the same as Obama's Iran deal. This is sleeping with the enemy.
Can we just get something out on the table about the war, putting off the war games? We do the war games with South Korea once a year.
Twice
we just
a year.
Did them a month ago, okay? Right. So the next time we would do them in the ordinary course would be next May. Full war games we do are annual. I think.
We call them full joint exercise.
Bore, and the next time we would have done it would have been next spring, next May. And what he said was, "Yeah, we're going to put them off unless they're not moving along fast enough on the deal." That was a throwaway, and I don't know why everybody's losing their minds over that.
Well,
there's got to be some reason to lose one's mind, right?
Always.
That's what we're here for.
Jonathan says North Korea. Kim can blow this agreement up at any moment if the U.S. military seeks to hold joint exercises. Trump may well ask Kim permission so as to make U.S. still appear strong. Kim says no all leverage is now with North Korea and China. Trump cannot afford to have this all blow up in his face, and that's from Jonathan in Valley Forge.
Hey, political scientist fella.
That's me.
Do you think that Trump's 2020 chances ride on this? The success of this?
I think I'm with Rich on this. I think certainly they're going to help.
Yeah.
And I think his numbers are going to go up as a result of this, whether we think it's phony or not.
But if it blows up and doesn't come to anything, and we're back to square one by next March, what then?
It would take a lot of blowing up. In other words,
it would have to actually literally blow up.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it would have to be, they'd have to set off another nuclear explosion, or they'd have to put another thing up in the air and do that. Then, of course, all bets are off. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think the North Koreans have achieved exactly what they've always done. They say, yes, we agree with you, we're going to do it, and they're not going to do it.
Okay.
There is a political eternity, though, between now and 2020. Now, if this was in 2019, I would agree there might be some sort of boost, so, similar to what we saw with the president, you know, with President Obama in 2011 with the bin Laden hit. So I would say, you know, we'll see what happens.
Does it affect the midterms?
You know, again, I can see some effect to the primaries, and again, the midterms are still a few months away. You know, a lot can happen between now and then.
It's a tough one. That's a real
question,
tough one.
Because I don't love the et al thing, by the way.
We're et al.
You're the star now, man.
I must start calling myself et al. Are we et al one, et al two?
Yeah. I'm sorry, you missed it. It's not et al. It's et al.
Don't call him Al.
It's et alium is actually the Latin.
Yes. Right. You go to a public college or a private college?
I went to a public college, SUNY Albany.
Look at that.
Yeah, man.
Good old you, Albany.
All right. Russ says, reality diplomacy show. As expected, the Chinese now have indicated they will be easing the sanctions regime against North Korea. By the way, they already were. And Kim Jong-un will begin the process of taking the U.S., talking to the U.S. about denuclearization. These talks will probably continue for a series of presidential terms.
I don't think so. I think it's either going to happen or not happen within Trump's term.
Yeah, I mean, one thing we've seen out of President Trump is he tends to move rather quickly.
It's one of the things that is so scary about him. Cheryl says, meetings with Kim. Why was there no mention of Kim's human rights violations? Actually, there was. The first question was about his
But wasn't Trump's response to that? I'll ask it in a leading way. I thought Trump's response when that question was asked, I thought was the proper response, where he said, "Yeah, we actually mentioned it, we talked about it," but he said that wasn't the main thing that we're here for. The main thing we're here for is denuclearization.
Well, I'm glad.
Doesn't mean it's not important. I mean, she's right to point that out.
Sure.
But isn't that the next step if this actually happens?
Well, no, because we have promised at the same time that I think it was Pompeo who said it, that there would be no regime change. So if you're not going to have regime change, and they've established their regime by this oppressive gulag system and everything else, you're basically saying you're in. Aren't you?
Yeah, but I think part of that, you know, this is in line with our conversation last week where we said, you know, once you get somebody into kind of the fold of nations, you know, there are some market forces, you know, private market forces that can act upon you with respect to human rights. And then also we would probably bring some political pressure. But I think it's necessary to say we have to start with this denuclearization issue and then move to the other issues.
Does Kim come to the White House at some point?
Oh, absolutely.
How soon?
Sooner the better, as far as Trump is concerned. If he sees those numbers going up, he's going to play this like a violin.
Yeah, that would be a first for a politician.
Yeah, but you say he actually will go to the White House. I don't see them.
He's going to the White House
or Camp David.
Put your money on the table.
I would see Camp David.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh well, okay. Yeah. White House, Camp David. You know.
Or somewhere in between, but I don't, you know, again, it'll be on Air China.
A Marriott
somewhere. It won't be on the illustrious day. Yeah.
He did say the words White House.
Okay.
He did.
Fair enough.
Okay. Cheryl says, meeting with Kim. Why was there no mention of Kim's human rights? We did that. What does a handshake mean to Kim? It may end up isolating U.S. more. I totally agree with Alan about Trump's dishonesty. Well.
Okay.
Thank you for
that. Somebody agrees with Alan. Newsflash.
John says, not feeling safer. Rich, one of the big differences between Iran and North Korea is that North Korea already has a nuclear bomb and one that is deliverable to the continental United States. This joint statement agreement to come out of Singapore is like a Chinese restaurant menu. Choose one from column A, two from column B, etc. Do they still have those Chinese menus? Because I was thinking about that the other day. You used to go for a buck and you choose A and B.
The combination platter.
Yeah. All 4 points on the new agreement, and new is in quotations, are recycled out of previous agreements issued between the U.S. and North Korea. Nothing new at all. The true winner, who said this and who's been saying it for weeks, was China. And I have to say, I hate to say I told you so, but when the Times put on...
Do you hate to say that?
Yes, I really do. Okay. I mean, because why would I fight with the Times? Right. They get even with you. And there was, you know, there was this whole thing about how nervous China was about these talks. China's made out like a bandit as a result of all of this. Everything that China could want. Rich is shaking his head.
I don't see it. Listen, I certainly agree that if we achieve peace, for example, with North Korea to the point where we can actually achieve a force reduction, you know, from 26,000 to something less than that. Yeah, I could see China being happy about that.
The joint war games, for example, you think that China's not happy about that?
Talk to me next May when those games would or would not have happened, and then we'll see.
All right. The true winner was China. While I hope true peace could happen, we know how all these previous agreements have ended, and that's from John. Thank you, John.
Well, thank you very much. And the email address here is panel@wamc.org, and I really appreciate everybody keeping those letters brief. Keep them coming. We would love to hear from you. Brace yourself for a likely new era of media mega mergers. That's next on the Roundtable. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm disliking the entire panel more and more here. It's Ray in for Joe, and frankly, except for Jen.
What?
All right, Rich, you're all right, but Shartok, like you're California. Really...
I give you credit where credit's due.
All right, Joe, you're okay. You're all right. Just Alan. He's bugging me. He's giving me a hard time.
Well, that's all I said was that I thought you were a Trumper in lamb's clothing.
That's a terrible thing to say.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Take it back.
All right. I think you're a Gus Hall in lamb's clothing. All right?
Everybody in lamb.
Of course, nobody knows who Gus Hall is, and that's what's so great.
It is a 9:45, Gus Hall? Boy, I wish it was
Gus,
later.
Gus Hall ran for president on the Communist Party line for a million years.
Every
like
year.
In the 70s. And,
a native son.
And I think Angela Davis might have run with him as vice president.
Interesting. Well,
somebody look that up. Sorry, Ray. We can get back to the show
AT&T's victory over the government's attempt to block its $85 billion takeover of Time Warner underscores just how much the way people watch and pay for TV has changed. It also highlights how corporate America wants to adapt to deal with this new environment. In short, bigger is better. The government argued that the merger would stifle competition and lead to higher cable bills, but U.S. District Judge Richard Leon ultimately agreed with AT&T's assertion that it had to grow to survive in the era of Google, Amazon, and Netflix. A combined AT&T Time Warner could also get a boost from the official end of net neutrality. Mm-hmm.
I am so glad we have corporate attorney Rich Honan with us today, because it seems to me that what we have here is an incredible tension between the Trump, I'll get even with you if you say bad things about me on CNN, and the idea about corporate, the corporate megalopathy, or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Norm Crosby's on the show now.
The idea that there is a tension between Trump here, who didn't want it, and the corporate folks in this world who think there's no such thing as too much monopoly.
Well, I think Justice had to take the view that this merger, even though it's a vertical merger, which are not usually the objections to them are not usually upheld. I think Justice had to take that view. I mean, it's two very large pervasive entities.
So, just to remind everybody, Justice said no.
Right.
We don't want this.
Right.
A lot of people thought that was Trump calling in the plays.
It might have been. Yeah. Look. Part of it is it would have made trouble for CNN, and Trump is not that friendly towards CNN.
To put it mildly.
But I will say it is Justice's. It is the job of the Antitrust Division to try to resist combinations that are quote in restraint of trade. It usually happens more in horizontal mergers.
Ah, the horizontal merger. This is a vertical one.
Right. Mm-hmm. There we go. So horizontal, so we're all on the same page. Horizontal is when two competitors combine, mm-hmm. Coke and Pepsi combine or something like that. A vertical merger is when two parties who are along the distance distribution or the supply chain combined. So, one company may actually be delivering content, and another one is actually maybe the means that they use to deliver the content.
Right. So let me ask you a question. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a bad thing. I really do. I think it's bad, and I understand that AT&T, Joe, was very open about saying, we need to do this because we need to get our customer information the way Google does. Mm-hmm. So, and it was almost on that basis that it was upheld, but I think that's a bad thing.
Well, do you think this was a poorly argued case? Judge Leon said the government failed to prove that the merger would lead to higher prices and other harm to consumers. Despite the Justice Department lawyers taking their best shot, Leon said their evidence was too thin a reed for this court to rely on. Did they do a bad job?
I thought, judging from, and I wasn't there, okay, and believe me, things happen, you know this, things happen a lot differently in court than they actually, you know, can be reported. But it seemed like the experts that Justice was using, there was some hyperbole about the effects on competition, right? They were like
hundreds
of billions of dollars. It just didn't.
I feel badly. It didn't really make
a lot of credibility.
I feel badly because... I think I agree with
Rich.
But I think it was the what came out though it was the way that the case was presented by the government. I think if there was a private entity or class action kind of way that this was brought to the courts, I think you might have a different outcome. But I think because it was brought the way that it was and it was represented by who it was, I think that's why the judge ultimately made the decision that he did, which is unfortunate in the time of the ultimate repeal of net neutrality and, what that gives those providers the opportunity to do. And here you have a case with a provider being given that much more
And so AT&T
power to the tune
But here's the thing. The landscape is going to change, and we already know that Disney wants to buy out the assets of 21st Century Fox, which will also create more consolidation. There used to be a cartoon, it was part of TV Funhouse with SNL, that made fun of media consolidation 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was when we had six major companies doing it. Now we're going to get it down to three.
Yeah.
So every step of the way, we're getting down to the point where not only will these companies supply the content, but they will deliver the content, and they will have such control over what you see in every single platform.
Well, of course, the real upside is more superhero movies.
Yeah, you could see that. But again, it also, kills the creativity pipeline, too. That's the other side of it.
Sort of.
Somewhat.
Well, I mean, one thing's for sure. If AT&T Time Warner wants to now, in this era of net neutrality being gone, idle back the Netflix pipe, I guess that's A-OK.
I mean, you could see also, let's say, down the road, maybe a Netflix-Verizon merger, things like that. You know, this is the problem with this deal.
Yeah, and in a larger sense, when you look at CVS and Aetna Health, and where you just have just large companies, owning the entire distribution and supply chain, it seems like, and that's why I started the conversation, Alan, by saying, regardless of Trump and CNN, Justice had to oppose this. Mm-hmm. Jen, I agree with you. I think that nobody wanted to stand up and say, look, we know what AT&T is trying to do, and we know they're trying to compete with Google, but we shouldn't be letting Google do that. We shouldn't be letting anybody do that.
But there is opposing and opposing. I've often spoken of the concept of the double, triple, quadruple fake out.
Yes.
I don't know whether this is consistent with Justice opposing, and judges are, in my mind, I guess you're going to disagree with this, political actors. They often know who appointed them. They often know what people want. Mm-hmm. And I just suspect this. My question to you, Rich, would be, what happens when this gets to the Supreme Court of the United States? Is it 5-4?
Oh, I think it was a well-read. I didn't read all 176 pages. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't know. It sounds like I agree with Jen. The basis upon which they built their case, upon which Justice built their case, was
it's going to be harder. Yeah. I think it's going to be harder to bring a case in that regard because I think no one's going to want to make that decision. I don't think. Yes, could the government appeal, but I don't think that's going to happen either. It's just timely and costly. And I think that was the goal of this judge, too, is that, you know, he said in his ruling he wanted to have a quick turnover in this case.
Yeah.
He wanted to stick to his deadline.
Did not grant the stay pending appeal.
He was not thrilled with the fact that it was costing like tens of millions of dollars to litigate.
Right. And the judge did say that he would not temporarily block that merger, as Rich just mentioned. The drop-dead deadline for this merger to take place is June 21st.
But here's the historical context. Think about the company, you know, the newer AT&T, which was born out of the breakup of Bell in 82. And so SBC bought out AT&T about 12 years ago, and then now they're trying to grow further and further. So we're starting to see, again, this repopulation, this regrowth of all the former baby Bells in that regard.
Will you remind everybody what SBC is?
Southwestern Bell. So that was one of the six. Right, yeah.
So now the baby Bells are, as in a horror movie, being recreated.
Because Verizon the same way. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to a couple of letters here. Take us up to the top of the hour, old sport.
All right, whatever you say.
Old sport.
James.
Suddenly turned into the Great Gatsby.
James.
I say.
North Korea and the Iran deal one of the big complaints of the Iran deal from Trump and the Republicans was that it didn't address any of the human rights issues in the country, and this North Korea deal, in quotes, has nothing to do with human rights or details on a timeline. The level of inspirations, all issues, the right had problems with the Iran deal. What is Rich's take on that? We've already heard.
And also, that was not one of the non-human rights aspect of the Iran deal was actually not one of the main objections that people had to that deal. It was every other part of it.
Christopher writes, for once, I agree with Rich. He is totally correct that this panel would be kissing the ground that Obama walked in if he had done any deal with North Korea. Yes, it is posturing. Sometimes posturing is what is needed. I am a diehard liberal, but I also think it is important to give some credit to this buffoon of a president when he is doing seemingly positive things. Stop being such Debbie Downers all the time.
Yes, Alan. Stop being a Debbie Downer.
Please excuse
you indeed.
please excuse typos. I cannot spell.
Yeah, you did good.
Well, you did, and the way that this letter is postured, it comes in sort of. I'm going to have Jen look at it. It looks like it's a poem.
It does.
You went to a private college.
Maybe it's a haiku.
If you went to a public
college. Is it 14?
College. What?
Few extra lines.
Yeah.
Okay. Shaking my head, says Zach. Dear panel, yes, if it happened 4 years ago, we would have been praising Obama. But, capital is, after a meeting like this, Obama wouldn't have told the entire world via Twitter that there's no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea. This first meeting has not denuclearized North Korea, which, parentheses, Alan's saying, is what he said he was going to do. So let's stop pretending that it has. And that's from Zach.
All right, Zach.
And Rich, you've changed the whole thing. He said, I'm not going unless it's complete denuclearization. And that's not what happened.
Well, he didn't say when.
What'd you say?
He didn't say when.
No, he said at that meeting.
All right.
That's what had to be agreed.
Next letter.
Okay.
So actually, Kim was going to show up with the actual nuclear weapons.
Yeah, right.
And
yes.
Hand
here
them
you
over
go.
To Pompeo.
Right. Here are my 50 warheads.
Pompeo backs up his car. And
right.
Then everybody just
look at the credit at the McCout rate.
I love to hear from Molly because I never read last names, but her last name is Tabachnikov, and I went to school with the Tabachnikov brothers at Hunter College, and they used to go and trap raccoons in the park.
Of course.
So whenever I see Tabachnikov, I see
think of raccoons being trapped. That's wonderful.
I agree with Rich and the rest of the panel that it's better to talk than fight. What I object to in this instance is hoisting the mission accomplished banner at this basic level. I think it's also true if President Obama had done this, we would be more optimistic, but I doubt that the former president's administration would have conducted all the talks in this way. There would have been far more preparation and reports coming out of the meeting would have been more restrained. Once again, thanks for your wonderful show, says Molly. Mm. Molly, you go after those raccoons, but before but before I do, I want to point out that there have been several letters today from fairly liberal folks who can be expected to do liberal things, who are basically praising the president and what he's done. Mm. Which means his numbers are going up.
Ah, interesting.
See, I actually think what it means, it might mean that, but it also might mean that all of us in these these kind of tumultuous times. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of the listeners and a lot of us are really trying hard, you know, to answer that question. You know, so mm-hmm. if the other guy had done this, what would I say? You know, right. You're trying to actually look at it
objectively. Well, that's just your rhetorical stuff.
All right, listen, man, we got to take a break here. It's the round table. It's the round table panel. Alan Shartok is here, Jen Smith, Rich Honan, and Joe Bonilla, and you at panel@wamc.org if you want to write us a brief note. We'll take a break for news, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Wednesday morning, 6 minutes after 10 o'clock here on a beautiful sort of drab and soon-to-be rainy Wednesday. But we're lightening things up with a great all-star panel today, and Joe Bonilla is anchoring the panel. He is a communications consultant. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here. Corporate attorney Rich Honan is here. And our own Alan Shartok is here. The email address is panel@wamc.org, and I understand, Alan, that we have a stack of letters.
We do. Jules says, Trump as leader or dictator? Dear panel, please explain to me how Trump is not acting as a dictator. So far, all I hear is do as I say, and that's regards from our friend Jules, who sometimes goes by Julius. He has an alias. Oh. Jules or Julius. He's a very good friend of ours.
Needs a better alias than that because right. They're very, very,
very
close.
Similar.
Tara says, North Korea. Hi, panel. What I think when I think of the meeting between President Trump and North Korea, how many Trump towers and or golf courses will we see built in North Korea now? I have great difficulty understanding anyone who thinks Trump cares about more than that. Thanks for all you do, and that's from Tara. And thank you, Tara, for that wonderful letter.
Did you see the part in the press conference where he said he was talking to, and he said, you know, you got China on one side, you got Singapore here, you could put a resort right here, right in the middle.
Couldn't resist.
It's hardwired, yeah.
Joe says, thank you, Rich. The voice of reason, Rich, speaks, and I believe he hit the nail right on the head. Partisan folks will take positions in support of their chosen one. If Obama made these inroads, his supporters would be promoting him for a second peace prize. The arguments from both sides drive us moderates nuts at times. And it's signed, Saith Joe.
I like it.
Very nice. Very, you know, biblical and all. But it also goes back to my point of Trump and his numbers. And will this help him? It's going to help him.
Are any moderates going to get elected this next time through?
Less and less every single time. But you start seeing some people.
I think you're wrong.
Yeah. Why? Wrong.
Well, because I think what's happening is the Republicans are not nominating moderates. They're going with the Trumpers all the way right.
Right.
But the Democrats and all of the by-elections are showing this are going for the moderates because they want to win.
Yeah.
And so that's what's happening.
Interesting.
Okay. And that's how elections are lost or won by whether your candidates are ideologues.
So you're predicting you're predicting big Democratic gains.
I am.
And are they going to take the Senate?
I don't think so. But
what about the House?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, really?
Okay. Oh,
at least
really?
One of them, yeah. One chamber.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Well, I would say that the Senate's a lot less optimistic than anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's because the Democrats have to defend so many more seats and all the rest of it. Mm. Thank you for moving my microphone
right
in front of me, Ray. I appreciate that. That makes you a consummate broadcaster.
You
as
see?
Opposed to me.
Mm-hmm. You see?
Hello?
An all-star broadcaster.
Well, when you started, you were using megaphones and not microphones. So
and riding in on a dinosaur.
Exactly.
All the way from Great Barrington. Summit. It is my understanding that all sanctions will remain in force until positive steps are taken by North Korea, and that's from Dwight.
That is what has been said. That's
correct, Dwight.
You believe that? Mm-hmm. I'll buy you another one. Okay, and Mike says, Obama impeachment. While Rich may have a point that Obama supporters would be praising Obama had they been able to do what Trump has done, the flip side of that, Rich, is that the Republican Congress would be sharpening their impeachment knives had Obama signed the kind of statement Trump did. As further evidence, I would point to Sean Hannity's contradictory statements condemning Obama for wanting to talk to our adversaries and effusively praising Trump for doing the same. And that's Mike from Glens Falls.
Mike's absolutely correct on that one, right? Yeah. I mean, we're all making the same arguments. We're just converting
around
the same arguments that we did in the Rand deal.
Huh. Bob says, one thing at a time. If it was appropriate for Trump to concentrate on one thing at a time and not deal with human rights violation, why was it so bad, according to conservatives, for Obama and the others who negotiated the Iran agreement to focus on nuclear issues and not with human rights violations?
Again, that human rights violations were not our criticism of that deal. Period. Mm-hmm. Our criticism of the deal was you know, every other part. I've listed the criteria.
And when
so many
you say
times.
Our, you mean you conservative? Guys,
yes, yeah. You know the one. You know we get on the conservative phone call every morning.
Yeah, right. With Mr. Burns from the Simpsons. Yeah. Yes.
And Aaron says troops in 150 countries. There are 196 countries in the world. American troops occupy 150 of them. Empire building, intervention, and endless occupations must end. Our insane military budget is why we have a crumbling infrastructure, poison water, lousy health care, etc. We may have won the battle, but the terrorists have won the war. We are destroying ourselves from within, and that's from Aaron.
Huh.
Peter says, next stop on the media SP mergers and net neutrality. Today we can look forward to AT&T and its fellow mega corporations using their expanded power to control our entertainment choices for their economic benefit. Bad enough. What will happen when they start limiting our information sources to support political or religious agendas?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest issue. That's a scary thing. Right. Mm-hmm.
What is the hope for an informed electorate when Fox News is the property of a vertically integrated media conglomerate that also includes Comcast? The historical power that comes from control of the printing press is now the power of the broadband pipes through which all information flows, and that's from Peter.
I think Fox News is not part of the contemplated deal.
No.
Are they talking about the Disney?
The Disney-Fox deal. It's separate.
I agree with him, but I think Fox News itself is not part of that.
And there's also talk about, you know, Viacom and CBS also splitting off again.
That one has been talked about for some time. That's huge.
And that was Sumner Redstone now, you know, not really having a seat on the board for Verizon. I mean, Viacom.
Yeah. And plus they're having a huge internecine battle on that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Are we interrupting your letters, sir?
Well, no, I like we're just it when you guys things. Talk among yourselves.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. Okay. No. Okay. The floor
it's
is
important
yours.
Stuff.
Okay. TJ says, Rich wrong. The largest military exercises, war games, were scheduled for this fall. Also, they are not just once a year. Pentagon says they are still on until officially notified. Okay, so I read, Rich, I have to say this, but I didn't want to pursue it, that it's twice a year.
I think that what we actually call the full war game exercises happen once a year. I know that we do joint exercises that don't reach that level because some of these are cyber in nature, too.
That did come up as a point of confusion when this story came out is the difference of what's classified as a war game and what Mike Pence was talking about regarding these readiness exercises.
Yeah, and Trump used the phrase war game, which is not a technical phrase to the Pentagon. My point is, by the time the next one comes, we will have had a chance to see whether there has been some movement on this.
And you can just see Trump turning around and saying, well, maybe I didn't do so good after all. It's not going to happen.
Well, did you see what he said? He had a certain funny comment about that. He said, you know, I might stand before you in 6 months and say.
And I'll come up with an excuse. I
won't blame myself.
He
said, I might say I was wrong. He said, well, I won't say I was wrong. I'll come up with some kind of.
Okay. And Neil says, can Rich explain how the AT&T Time Warner case differs from U.S. versus Paramount Pictures? The 1948 case in which the federal government stopped movie studios from owning their own theaters and holding exclusive rights on which theaters would show their films.
The Paramount Decree of 1948.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was kind of... That was kind of one of the last, you know, walls between
the studio system.
Yeah,
that's
vertical
right.
Integration and the fall of the studio system. Yeah.
And do you see the effects right now with that too? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Toby says, vertical merger question: what is the difference between Verizon buying Time Warner now and Comcast buying NBC Universal a decade ago? And that's from Toby.
Well, they're both content providers,
and
right?
Then says, Full disclosure: I used to work for NBC Universal prior to that deal.
Yeah, I think while they weren't direct competitors, I don't think you would say that was a vertically integrated movie.
No, it was a sale from Vivendi right?
So,
by the way, that was a great question on the Paramount thing. You know, what is the difference? I think the difference is that court would not have allowed this merger.
Right.
Interesting.
Things change.
Yeah.
Time Warner, AT&T. Panel, companies that own the monopoly broadband pipes into our house should not be allowed to own content. With the elimination of net neutrality rules, we are on a horrible path to poorer service, higher prices.
I, I hear you, bro. I'm just saying that I don't think it's just net neutrality though. I think it's a larger comprehensive
issue. Now, when you were in court, Rich, do you ever say, just say to the judge, "I hear you, bro"? But
not only that, I thought it was great because coming. It depends if you heard it from me. Hold I hear you, bro. Okay, but you hear it from Rich, who we see as a sort of conservative fellow, I hear you, bro.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to say, whoa. That
well, and the difference is when Rich says it, it's a billable hour. So it's
$1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least. Okay. Christine says, DD, you know what's wrong with a Debbie Downer? A demented demagogue.
Nice.
Well, okay. Thank you for your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. One of the letters recently read, mentioned we're destroying ourselves from within.
Yeah, I saw that.
Was that Khrushchev who said that? We will destroy you from within.
So Khrushchev said something like it.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that.
Khrushchev said we will bury you.
Okay,
well,
somebody.
Too, but he also said something about we'll destroy you from within. I was thinking
about that when I saw this L.A. Times article. Radical plan to split California into three states earned spot on November ballot. Quoting here the L.A. Times, California's 168-year run as a single entity could come to an end next year, as a controversial plan to split the Golden State into three new jurisdictions qualified Tuesday for the November 6th ballot. One primarily would be around L.A. The other two would be, one would be up north, one would be to the south of Los Angeles. And this has been talked about, I think, for about 100 years.
Yeah, a long time.
As has upstate versus New York City.
Right, and this whole, originally started with this whole six Californias plan.
Right.
And, you know, if you break it up, I mean, with the three Californias, you know that Southern California will probably, you know, trend to be more conservative. Same thing with Northern California above the Bay Area. But, you know, it's an issue. But I think at the same time, it still has to seek congressional approval at
Absolutely.
Some point. Right.
Yeah. So this ain't going to happen.
No.
Well, it's an interesting thing, though. I mean, that it would even make the ballot. Yeah. I mean, people voted for it.
Hey, man.
Well, there's a lot of investment in that ballot measure, too. And I think that has something to do with it. But if you look at the poll numbers, I think only 17% of Californians say they would support it.
But where's that investment come from? Like, why?
That's the question.
Like, I think that's the bigger issue of what's been ending up on ballots over the past 3 to 5 years is, you know, there's a lot of dark money and mysterious money kind of filtering across state borders and into these ballot questions.
California's a funny place, Jen. It's a funny place.
I don't think Californians would disagree.
Well, they could disagree, but they'd be wrong. But, you know, they put all this stuff on the ballot. There's been junk on the ballot for years and years. And, you know, in the beginning, it seemed like a good idea that you could put anything on the ballot. I've always agreed with that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the downside of that is the big money can start to put anything on that they want to.
But I think it also relates to, again, sort of these micro divides within our country, too. And so, you know, is it easier to polarize certain parts by geography and say, well, we're just going to district, you know, the conservative Californians in this area, the more liberal and the purple ones here? You know,
well, the issue is that, you know, you see the 55 electoral votes that California has. You break them up
into
and 18, 19 apiece. That has significant, you know, ramifications on our presidential election. So if this, let's say hypothetically this goes through, and let's say there is a, you know, Republican-controlled House. You know what? That's fine. We're broken up California because they know that it will only benefit the president's reelection efforts in 2020.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's
nice.
One of the arguments, too, is talking about, cost savings and tax cuts. But I don't know within the new tax law and with the cost it would take to actually get this to go through, whether there's actual legitimate and significant savings to the people.
But Joe's point answers my question, which is where's the big money coming? So this is basically right-wing money trying to break up the power of California's electoral force.
I think, maybe. Democrats are pouring money into it as well. If you look at the way it would be broken up, more senators.
Devil's in the details. That's
so
a good point.
You have two that might be Republican, but you would have certainly four that would be Democrats.
Would you call this gerrymandering?
Yeah, right. I don't think you're allowed to. I haven't checked the Constitution recently, but I don't think you're allowed to make up a state on your own.
No, you can't.
You can. Okay. You can. Well, you can't make up a state.
No, you can't.
But I did see the play Oklahoma, so I know that there's a process.
You will remember how it all came about. out with Alaska and, and Hawaii.
I do remember that.
That was the deal. Yes.
Well, it's Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution lays out how a state would be divided into new states. So the forefathers thought about such a thing. There have been 200 attempts, according to this article, to either reconfigure the boundaries of California, have it secede, or break it into pieces. It's incredible. Wow. 200 of them. All right. Well, the email address here is panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. I guess we'll have to wrap it up about a minute and a half early today.
Well, I got to tell you that Patrick wrote and said it was Abe Lincoln who said the quote about destroying from within.
Aha. Uh-huh. Huh. Khrushchev or Abe Lincoln.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That sounds familiar. Yeah.
He said that.
All right. Are we done?
No, I'm not done. I'd like to stay for a little while.
Well, you have one minute. The one last thing in the California thing is that we just saw in the primary out there, you had Gavin Newsom and John Cox, who just won the top two spots for running for governor this fall.
Yeah.
And California has a jungle primary. And the Republicans were so afraid that they were not going to get one of the top two spots.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If that is any indication about how this ballot will actually go through in November, I see Gavin Newsom really sweeping the floor with John Cox, and that could also lead to the tailwinds of also this ballot measure being done.
Wasn't Gavin Newsom the one who used to be on the Johnny Carson show, the band leader?
Tommy Newsom.
That's Tommy Newsom.
And on
that's
where we'll
on
we'll
that hyper intellectual note.
Well, thanks to Jen Smith and Rich Honan and Joe Bonilla and Alan Shartok, and thank you for listening. Now the roundtable continues. We have some great stuff coming up. David Crosby and Judy Collins and many other things coming up. It's the roundtable on WAMC.